Hola, la problema es ha partido el tiempo en la casa.
Thank you, Chef. That's it. First, let's start by apologizing about. Yeah. Unfortunately, it's not natural, but I will try to speak as loud as I can. I hope it's better now. Honorable Minister, thank you for noting that we are saying that the target market that we have to send is huge. It is indeed. In 2011, it sends us results. It tells us that 40% of our country's population is in rural areas. That is, by specific government definition, communal land and farmland. But the rough mandate is bigger than that, because it also includes small towns. Now, in terms of what we achieve annually, it is a function of the financial resources that we have. In other words, if we had more money, we'll do more every year, but we can't, because as you all know, we actually are relying, we are owned by the government of South Africa, and in recent times, the market conditions have been very, very tough. We've gone back many times to the department and to government to ask for additional funding so that we can actually scale up the achievement of our mandate, but we understand the constraints that we have. But be that as it may, we have gone back again so that from the next financial year, we can in fact get additional grant capital that we can utilize to scale up access. Over and above that, as I indicated, that URAS is a creation or is a result of a partnership between the Southern government as well as the German government. We are in the process again of trying to raise loan capital from KfW. In fact, two weeks ago, KfW was here in South Africa to do a post-evaluation of URAS because they consider URAS to be one of their successful programs internationally in terms of the model and how it can give us address development issues. So through the track record, positive track record that we have, we hope that we'll be able to access additional funding, which if we add to additional grant capital, we can then utilize this to scale up access to housing microfinance or intermediate housing finance for the benefit of rural households. It's an omission on our part, because if you look at the APP as well as the annual report, we always include the provincial spread, because RALF has a national footprint. We are currently lending in all provinces. I hope when you come back next time, we'll make sure that the slide is always there. I think it was an omission, because this is not the first time we are actually facing this question, so we apologize. But I can give you assurance that you work with Natal, actually is the leading province, not because I'm from KwaZulu-Natal, by the way, but because it's one of those provinces to get original, yeah. I can declare that, but that has nothing to do with the performance of about KwaZulu-Natal Eastern Cape. We're also doing well in the Eastern Cape, but we are actually trying to do more in other provinces where we find that even though that we are lending there, but we think we should do better, like Limpopo. Limpopo is one of the rural provinces as well, so we need to scale up. But scaling up, again, as I've indicated, the function of resources that we have, together with the intermediaries that we have operating in those provinces. Mr. Gordon indicated that we recently signed up two intermediaries in Limpopo. Supported by financial resources. in the past. We have used radio, local radio stations, as well as local newspapers, to try to enhance our visibility. But it will be very difficult for us to make sure that we are known by everyone. You see, marketing also has to be consistent with what you can offer. What you promise, you must be able to offer as well. So when you market, you're always very careful that in the forefront is our intermediaries. We are real people. Some of the other ones I've seen, real people, very hot, land hot. Those are in the forefront. So when you try to promote, we try to promote informal housing finance as an appropriate mechanism of building houses rather than promoting rural housing and road funds outside as a brand. This is as much as we are trying to increase the visibility. We are working with the Department of Human Settlements, going through all the municipalities in the country, and trying to make presentations to the local centers, to housing officials, so that Oral is known. We have had discussions with the department that because they are resuscitating the consumer education strategy, that we want to keep it back on that one, because it's very important that people understand that apart from accessing subsidies, house from government, actually there are other avenues. Because many consumer target market will never access mortgage finance. So I fully agree with you that we have to be very strategic in terms of who knows us, you know, and what promise we make, can we keep that promise. So we really actually try to make sure that we continue to enhance the awareness of the RAD grant. Over to you.
I think you asked me about interest rates. The interest rate at the moment, that's a lot of the intermediaries do charge the maximum allowed by the National Credit Act, which currently is just over 32%, which is why we're trying to reduce those rates. 75% of our loans, though, people are getting it 12% lower than that. So the intermediaries actually drop their rates substantially there, and that's why we said we actually are prepared to take a reduction in our rates. The main issue with the rates seems to be the bad debts, because the clients do have very high bad debt rates. One who's got who's charging the lowest rates has the lowest bad debt rate, so they can afford it. We've actually been spreading that model to other clients and saying, look, this is what these people can achieve, why don't you? And what we've been having resistance for years, suddenly that all come to and say, yeah, okay, we'll do that. And so I think we're going to, over the next 2 or 3 years, find there's going to be a lot of competition in that market, and the rates are going to generally come down. Because previously, I think there was no real competition. Everyone just charged the maximum and their marketing campaign was how they competed. Now there seems to be competition on price. And I think we've been instrumental in setting that up. In terms of the money flows, we've got the cash in the bank. We will, an intermediary will approach us, a new one or an existing one, with a business plan. We take it to our credit committee, which is a board committee. They will approve the amount of the loan and the interest rate that the intermediary will be charged in terms of our interest rate policy. From there, the client will then, we will then do a risk assessment on the client before we make the first disbursement to make sure they've got the system in place. Sometimes their business plan says we will put this in. We make sure they've got that before we disburse. They will, as an example, we'll give a private loan of say 5 million rand. They will come to us, we'll check what they've got, and we'll then pay them to serve out, say, 250,000 to 300,000, depending on what we discuss with them or what their plan says. We then, the next day, once they've disbursed that, then we'll then disburse more to them until they get up to that 5 million. They lend directly to clients, charge them the fees, they've all the commercial intermediaries use computerized systems to make for their credit checks and their collections. We don't have any manual on the commercial clients. Obviously on community base, some of them don't have electricity, so we cannot hardly ask it to computerize. Those obviously are a different thing. The money then flows from the debtor to the back to our intermediary, who then pays us off in accordance with the plan. Bad debts where the individuals don't pay the intermediary, it's not our problem. We get the intermediary has to pay us in full. They take the risk of the
Pankaj and Mr. Sodhi for that presentation. We now move to Sutop. I hope they are here. Are they here? They are not. Okay. They are not. Hello. Okay. Do we know why they are not here? From the department? Before we start? Can I hear a comment from the department?
I'm just saying there was no apology from the department from the system.
Is that all you are telling us?
We will follow up the question as to why they are not here yet. They know that they were supposed to be here.
You think that they are still on their way? Maybe because
yes,
we are a bit early with time?
Yes, sir.
Is that what you are saying?
Yes, sir.
So are we moving them to the step to the bottom?
Yes, sir.
And that they will be here by the time we finish. Yes, is that what the department is saying?
Correct.
Okay. Thank you very much. Can I move then to the next presentation lecture? Are they here? Aha. Come closer. Once that is happening, we are hoping that the department is following up on this one. We don't have any other day. They must come and present today. Lecture is coming, and then maybe what lecture is getting themselves ready. Let me just check as well. The last one, are they here? EAAD? So that I don't get any surprises.
Okay,
so I'm not going to be surprised. No, thank you very much. Okay, this entity is known as National FN Reconstruction and Housing Agency. In short, NEHA. Yeah, they are going to NEHA, not now. Are they ready? Almost there. Okay.
Was responsible for lending to contractors.
solid is to ensure availability of bridging finance to small and medium contractors, as well as developers in the affordable housing area. But we, because we are in the human settlement area, our mandate at some stage was revised to make sure that we also accommodate contractors that deliver community facilities. And you will see from the history of our records those three streams in the lending business. Our lending business is made up of the following components. The affordable housing and has as an opening is that from the change that we've seen in the last few years, we fulfill our business ourselves. That was part of the change from the old business of doing business via intermediaries, and right now we fulfill that business as nature. One category of affordable housing, we split it in what we call ownership, which is full title, where we finance developers that are producing products that are out for mortgage to the public, the affordable housing and gap housing. That's for full title. And really the flow of funds in there is that the developer will come with a piece of land that is planned, fully approved, then we finance the servicing and dock structures. And we get them to be repaid when the mortgages flow to end users from the bank. And the developers get to repay us. We're also exploring short-term finance around the area of rental. And I want to emphasize that short-term finance because in this product, we are financing and targeting developers that will come to us with a project, and we will finance them for the construction of the project. Once we've completed the construction of the product, then there must be a payer at the end that will take us out with a long-term mortgage. It may be a bank that will finance that developer over a period of 10 years. They will pay us, and then the developer will repay the bank over time, or NHFC. Then we finance contractors that are building houses. They will come with a tender. They want the finance cash flows to, in order to implement the program, and we finance, bridging finance in that. And the critical dependency there is payment from the employer, that is the department that has employed that contractor. And that's the sole source of repayment of the loan. Because majority of the contractors that we finance, and when I talk majority, I easily talk 90%, do not have the strength of balance sheets or personal balance sheets to repay us from their own sources when the chips are done. So it becomes important that that flow of funds, payment on time from the employer, whether it's the department or the municipality, is properly monitored and flows properly until completion of the product. Then we have program management, which we will talk about later on. We implement a number of programs there. We've got intervention in the Free State, Eastern Cape. We're doing the target eradication program. We're doing the Vulindlela program in KZN. We will talk about those briefly later on. Because of the challenges that we've had in the past, we then, together with the department, crafted a program that will receive intensive support to contractors. We will group the contractors, we finance and provide support to those contractors as part of development and management of risk. And in those contractors, we would be focusing on women and youth. That is about mitigating risks, because as individuals, if they walked through our door, they would not make it through our credit rules. And therefore, we would want to group those. We call it contractor finance and development program, which is the element of finance and development. These these are the categories of contractors that we have. The first-tier contractor, just to give you a categorization of the market in simple terms. First category of the contractor will be the contractors that are established. These contractors, they are bridging finance they require. They run multiple projects. But where they have delays in payments or they require to buy certain materials, we will finance on every back of a number of projects that they finance. And they've got strong balance sheets, and they tend to exist across more than one province. They are established, they produce the units, we need to manage certain risks, they are few and far apart. Then the traditional contractor make up our 80% of the book. They can deliver the product, 300 houses, 600 houses, when all is going well. If inspections are happening right, payments are flowing well, you're not likely to see any threat coming to that contractor. But once that flow of funds breaks, you will start to see suppliers responding and you start to threaten enterprises with liquidation and trouble that we have experienced in the past, where situations where payment flows were not flowing well in that category of contractors. They tend to carry one, at most three contracts at a time. And then the lower one is the CFTP, where we can only group the contractors and work them on a programmatic or non-programmatic basis. We are exploring, we've done in the Eastern Cape and a pilot, we will be in the Western Cape and Mpumalanga trying to put together programs for development and would like to spread to across the provinces, as it is an area of emphasis in this term. Here's our since inception results. Since inception, we've produced 381,000 houses that are financed by NESA at the value of loans of 3.5 billion over the last 19 years. Briefly, this slide, if I may move on, this slide that is called net capitalization. Three things that I want to highlight there that are worth noting. NETSA was established by a partnership between the Soros Economic Development Foundation together with the South African government. And the contributions between the parties were 51 million each as a capitalization to NETSA. And from there, NETSA started to raise funds to be able to lend in the areas where we've been lending. We had a constraint of funds in the last 4 years, and we were recapitalized 100 million each year for the last 3 years, which is that 300 million that you would see there. The rest of other funds are funds that we've raised in the markets or in the DFI, and we've highlighted the pricing of those. Some of those are no longer with us because those terms were expired, and therefore we created new structures. We'll talk more about that later. Our loan book, and I will illustrate our loan book. Right now, the loan book as at end of June was a committed value of 606 million in projects in affordable housing and subsidy housing and infrastructure out of 64 active projects. That picture has changed, but the next slide that shows committed loan values. Right now, we have active loans with committed values of 564 million. That 564 million may be loans that have just been approved. They will continue to draw as they deliver services on the site until they get to the full amount of the loan. The affordable housing in that is 445 and subsidy housing is 118. This is a slide that was not in the initial set of slides, and I'm not going to spend a lot of time in this. All that I will to help interpret this slide, where it says pricing, that pricing is the cost of funds. That is, if we go and raise funds in PIC, will give you natural this fund as prime, and when we on land, we need to add a margin to that when we lend to the developer. And TIC and KDC is there are funds that we have raised for affordable housing. They're funds that were raised at the time of difficulty when we were short of funds, during the recession time when funds were coming expensive, not that they have become cheaper, but we are in a search for a better price fund, and we'll come to that. What are the factors that influence funds to come cheaper at the cost so that we can lend to developers? This is the list of active affordable housing projects. And in those projects that are listed there, there are 5,000 units of affordable housing. That is projects that are under 600,000 in price and get housing and sectional titles. They're sitting in that list. They are the active projects. Of that 5,000, we are anticipating that by the end of this financial year, we will have completed 2,800, as you will see in our APP, because these are multi-year projects. So when you read our targets in the APP to follow, we always, each year, we target new projects to sign in, to add to this list. So as we close completed projects, we add new projects where we sign in new loans. And the total there is 494 million in committed funds. The next list is a list of active subsidy housing projects. They are 26 projects. They have 17,000 units with those committed values of 135 million. Also they come and go. These are just illustrations of the type of contractors that we finance that would then be committing. We see there's a police station, just the top of the police station that we finance the commission. There's a reservoir and there's a church building in Soweto. Affordable housing, this is just a typology of sectional titles that we have financed across the country. We show the Emalahleni, we show Peter Diff, Newcastle, Richard Fay, Richard Fay, and Western Cape. Those are the types of sectional titles that we build via the developers that we finance. On the turnaround strategy, I'm not going to be long-term. All to say that we're given a mandate to say we need to restore sustainability at nature and make sure that the losses that we've seen from contractors that were collapsing and the growth in provision, we need to turn around that. In the last 3 years, we've had the work year was 2010, 2011, where we had provisions that went, that increased by even 60 million. But we will be reporting to you when we come a surplus of 7.2 that we are reporting in this financial year, which indicates that the turnaround strategy has been successful, and we are standing on our 2 feet to start back and deliver on impact and innovate in those areas where fund finance is still required. And I outlined the types of changes that we've made, and our strategy has been anchored on two elements: making sure that we are at the center of development relevance, that's why we call that pillar, and restore organizational sustainability. So the targets, if I may jump along, the targets have been outlined, the ATP, in subsidy, in affordable housing, we targeting to deliver 20 signed loans in this financial year and growing slightly in the next few years to 25 loans. In subsidy housing, we outlining achieving 28 in this financial year and growing slightly to 38 projects. Now, there are policies that will favor the type of target to be achieved, and we will outline those both for both streams. But the point that we want to make, we sit with the budget, we depend ultimately from a contractor or a developer coming to us and asking for a service. So we have to go out and market ourselves actively in the market, and we do that across the provinces. We've finished a round of talking to contractors and developers, which we do on an annual basis, and the response has been good. And we're starting to see, we're sitting right now at 18 projects that have been signed in subsidy housing. And when we project, we always set out the low and the high, and the solid line in this graph are the targets that have been set in our APC. Projected income is outlined there for the various streams of finance, which is income from our treasury, income from program management fees, income from the lending business, and it is outlined and captured in our financials. If I were to just highlight in affordable housing, key factors that determine a good year versus a bad year. Economic factors. If the economy is strained and muted, it affects the mortgage, the residential market in terms of demand, indebtedness, and willingness of banks to lend in that industry. And it's those factors that are outside of our control. But one of the NDCs here, ACA, talked about the value chain. The mining, focus in mining areas will also open up a number of opportunities, and this relates to speed of planning and approvals in the municipalities, provision of bulk infrastructure, because developers will go and buy land and deliver on that land if bulk services are in place. And then the ability to offer a good price to developers, because they have to pay that interest over a period of 18 months to 24 months, holding that debt that we have advanced to them. Similarly, with subsidy housing, a lot of other things have to happen: inspection, efficiency, contract management, and amongst other things, our instruments that protect our with the contractors. We sign an undertaking with the contractor where there's a specified account where proceeds of the project are paid. And that's an area that we continue to negotiate with the department so that we comply with that. When a contractor goes to the department against those agreements and colludes with an official to divert that money to another account, then we report an event of default. And that event of default puts us into dispute with both the contractor and the department or the municipality, and it stalls the project. And right now our plan is to develop a proactive approach to managing those intergovernmental relations, and we have advantages of drafting that protocol that we will sign and negotiate across the provinces. Sindisa next to me will pick up just critical aspects that have been noted on the financial.
Thank you very much, Chair President. This is our income statement over the next 4 years, including the current financial year. It shows that the income from operations will continue to grow from the 82 million in the current financial year to 189 in 2017-18. And the main contributor there is the core business of nature, which is the construction finance, together with the program management. There will be income or fees that we will be getting from that. There's other income which relates mainly to the recovery of that debt. In the previous year, it was very indicated we had write-offs, and as we are pursuing the collection of some of those debts, we hope to recover about 15 million in the current financial year and 7.5 in the next financial year. Provision for losses, we believe that there's still a need for us to make provisions for that because of the experience that we had in the industry. We believe that the 1.9 provision for losses this year. However, we still believe that we'll come up with a of 6.8 million, which will grow to 32 million in 2018. The balance sheet, I won't get to the details. However, I want to highlight that we believe our balance sheet will continue to grow from the 615 million to 1.1 million in 2017. And that assumes as well that we will be granted the loan we have applied for, not the loan, the grant, personal grant that we have applied for, of about 500 million, which we have proposed that it can be paid over 3 years. In our cash flow, this shows correctly how it should be appearing. The FEDF loan, which we have spoken to, will be repaid in 2015. Therefore, we need to have funds available so that the loan can be paid. The future growth loan is also not available now, it's coming to an end. We are currently negotiating with them so that the funds can be available going forward. However, we hope that we can also secure a government guarantee so that the funds can be available at a reasonable interest rate. Okay, I won't get to the details of the cash flow, except to highlight that the capital grant of 500 million, we hope to get 200 in 2016, another 200 million in 2017, and 100 million in 2018. I think those are the issues around financial projections. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, gentlemen. Okay. For that presentation, so
the last few points, I will not take long on this. There's a structure that was outlined here, which is our various subsidiaries that we have under nature. We've got special purpose vehicles, companies under nature. Whenever we raise funds with a private partner, we create a driver where we share the risk and the contributions towards that, and we specify which category of lending is financed. The green that's highlighted, that's under that subsidiary that we fulfill our program management services. And we follow a process that has been outlined here. Whenever we create an STV, we trigger a process for approval by both our minister and treasury, and we expose the types of risks that we are taking and the gearing, because in some instances we take higher risk and junior roles in the partnership. But all those go through approvals before we can get to lend from those structures. I will be brief. I outlined that we are fulfilling the budget eradication program in support of the national department. Our scope is in the Eastern Cape, and we're given a budget of 148 million to deliver across 8 municipalities. That is going very well, and the cash flows are the difficulties that we come across are difficulties that we can cross with the various players that are engaged in that. I think we are performing very well in there. In case that then we're doing Vulindlela, in Vulindlela, we are account administrators. The CRO community resource organizations are on the ground to deliver on units and construction, and these are the numbers so far that have been produced on completion to sitting at 5,000 units in those villages where we support that. In Free State, it was enhancing program management capabilities in the province as well as citizens. We are winding out our involvement with the state to improve the type of challenges that are faced by contractors that are fulfilling work in those areas. Doing some rural housing development program in the Eastern Cape, and we have trained some village builders that we found in those villages that have been building houses anyway, and enhancing their skills to deliver better products. I've upgraded this with the balance sheet that we have a share of about 600 million. I think we have delivered very well. We do want affordable residential market, we do collect a 10% average contribution across the country, and I think that we're optimizing on the funds that we have. And going forward, we will seek to get funds that are flexible to finance the needs of affordable housing in particular, but also uniquely priced funds to get into the subsidy housing, because the commercial bank cannot fund contractors because they can't price for it in that area of the market. And other areas, it is about strengthening our presence in the province as part of the change. Another element of consolidation is where we are highly exposed in provinces, that is where we're doing a lot of loans. We would welcome presence so that we keep the relationships with the departments and municipalities active, and together we can mitigate the types of risks that we face from time to time. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chair. My apologies for interrupting earlier when I thought you were almost finished. Questions of clarity? Now the editors know that when you come again to the portfolio, you get a slot in the afternoon, then you're not going to be crying. Honorable Tole, Honorable Ghana, Honorable Papa, Honorable Memin, questions of clarity. Oh, and Honorable Samasha. Very brief.
Thank you, Chair. Chairman, mine is very good. So this is just one off, right off. Which areas of have let this right off happen? Because it happened in 2020.
You can say anything, but this is my bold language. Another good gun.
Thanks. Just want to check with the bridging finance that you give to those that build subsidy housing. Because I presume, or I would expect, that the payment from those loans should be around 100%. Because the money comes from the department. You know that the department has paid the contractor.
unpacked to be used for those projects. If you say 26 and 7 affordable housing, subsidy housing 33, and then you could just attach to you.
Okay.
Yes. And then the other one, where we're dealing with the other two after that, the number 11, page 11. I've seen number of 60s in housing. I don't see a 60 in Cambridge. And does that mean you are not involved? I only see funding. Does it mean that you are not involved in the metro factory? If that's the case, then I'll have a follow up because some case you involve contractors is what one worker.
Honorable members, you are a national member of the assembly, not of the city.
There are cities, I'm sure, I've noted other cities, but it's the other cities not the system. And then I want to make an example of the number 39, PhD. If your grant talks about the foundation, the platform, and foundation, but if you have a foundation that are almost 2,000 that haven't had among one place, and my problem is that that's where our foundations get damaged. If you do, the category one, no foundation, and then you are slow to move. But
thank you. Another to Tapa.
No, just to share, just a clarity on your protection, rent protection. I see that you only go up to 18 and not 19 like others. And then the next one is when you say you are not getting a number of common tax, does that mean that you are under section 21? Thank you.
Another 2 minutes.
Briefly, on your conclusion, the summaries of the issues you have raised there, I tend to like them. What you said to Ralph, I would also want to say to you, your NDC is relevant to our energy conduct, because we are a developing country, so we need NDCs such as yourself. Indeed, I like what I read about your involvement in some rural contractors, you know, associates. So if we can feed you in our townships, so I think we must feed you. That is what I'm urging. These are important programs we are involved of changing the lives of our South Africa by empowering the small contractor to be a big person. So I like what I've heard, but maybe must hear who you have assisted there. So I think the next time you present, maybe let's really measure your assistance in terms of who. So thank you very much.
Thank you, another 2 minutes. The news block is finished. I hope you are awake. If you get that response, to those I wonder if the game feels you. So I like it.
Let me start with the question from Honorable Tana, because I will then touch on the first question that was raised around rifles. I think the capturing of the message was correct. The flow of funds is that the contractor comes undertaking to pay into a particular account, so that we track the flow of funds that are related to that project. This is about protection us, because the only protection for us is to protect the flow of funds. The balance sheet will not get much for that. So two things that can happen is that out of pressure from the contractor that is coming from other things, either projects or personal needs, if a fraudulent activity happens where they go and change fraudulently the account A, so that money that was supposed to go to account A has gone to account B, because it is difficult to recover that, then it becomes an event of default, then we get into a legal process. Okay, that's a fraudulent that includes crime. Secondly, it could be the contractor's fault, where the contractor has had a quality problem, and as a result of that, had to redo work. And in redoing that work, if they had put work worth 10 million on the ground, it is going to be hard for them to recover from that deficit, because they got no other sources of money. Now, those are contractual risks. Or if there is a delay in payment, and that delay in payment can not just sit in one spot, a financial section. It could be a delayed inspection that led to a delay in payment. And if in that delay, one supplier triggers a liquidation because they're collecting on certain days. And once you get into that mess, it is hard to recover. In projects that are not necessarily human settlements, it even gets complicated. If retention have not been paid for a year, or variation orders that have been done are executed, then that project is held up and the final account cannot be done on that project for easily a year. And that project starts to get into the danger of not repaying. But under normal circumstances, the contractor draws a 5 million, they buy material, when they get paid, they pay back the loan. So it's in and out all the time until those things go wrong. So in the change that we've done, and unfortunately it has affected a number of contractors negatively, we no longer advance for initial material and site application. So the contractor has to bring to us a certificate that has been approved. Then we land on the basis of that certificate. So certain risks you are eliminating in that, because quality issues are already eliminated because the certificate is there. But that assumes that contractor has got 500,000 to be able to produce that certificate, to buy the material and pay labor for a month or 2 months, and therefore they can occupy that. If they can't, then they will struggle on that because we cannot finance them. That is where CSDP, this structured program we try to put together, so that there's intensive monitoring of that. But it requires a lot of resources to make sure that you are close to the contractors as they deliver on that. And in terms of administration, you need to be have presence in the project where they are implementing that, and you need to be within a radius where you can drive from one project to another and all.
include anything. Two, we are doing well. We are left with two entities, EAAB and SISCOM. Those are the two entities that are left. So as they prepare to vacate this seat so that the EAAB comes to prepare, I'm hoping that SISCOM will be watching for the door in the meantime.
Shaplock, and I'm the Chief Executive Officer of the State Agency Affairs Board. I've got with me our Chief Financial Officer, Mr. Silas Muto, who's also joined me. We also have our Chief Risk Officer, Mr. Nikita Sikava, sitting very close by us, that's close enough. And we also have Kudian Klani, who's our Legal Technical Analyst. And we also would have loved this opportunity just so everyone can also meet our members. So we appreciate and Raheed with the portfolio comments. Chair, this opportunity for us to say a little bit of what the EAB do, and I think it's important for us to start with our core mandate. So like the HDA, we start the process of the supply chain of human settlement by buying land, preparing it for human settlement. We are really at the end of that cycle, and it's at the time when properties exchange hands or there are transactions relating to immovable property that the EAB as a regulator comes into play. So we regulate and maintain and promote the standard of conduct of the state agents. And those are those people who are advisors on property transactions when a seller wishes to sell his property, a buyer wishes to buy a property with a tenant or a landlord situation. It is possible for the state agent as a skilled, trusted individual who can be the intermediary in that transaction. It's very important that we regulate with due regard to the public interest. So it's our function as a regulator to protect the interest of the public when they're dealing with those who we regulate, estate agents, and that's how we protect them if things go wrong. So we issue a license called the Facility Fund Certificate to qualifying applicants, which are estate agents. We prescribe the standard of training for them, to keep them professional. Very specifically, we investigate complaints that we receive from consumers against the state agent, and then we institute disciplinary proceedings against such estate agents. We then also manage and control an estate agent stability fund, and the full function of that fund is to be able to reimburse a consumer of new property transactions when they've lost money at the hands of the conduct of an estate agent or someone supporting to be an estate agent. They register a claim with us, we will take procedures against the estate agent. The consumer will exhaust all legal avenues against that estate agent while we're aware of it. And if they do not receive their money through the legal process, we will reimburse them and then we'll take that position against the estate agent. We also have a secondary mandate, very important, and that is to combat money laundering and terrorist financing activities. We work closely with the Financial Intelligence Center, who created the EAB legislation as a supervisory body, and all the state agents are in accountable institutions who should report on cash transactions, suspicious transactions through the Financial Intelligence Center. Over and above that, we have got added responsibilities, definitely transforming the real estate sector, the important one that we have to be, the transformation of the real estate sector, and then also the title deed restoration project dealing with the backlog. So, Chair, if we look at our ACT created an organization run by a board of directors. It can also create certain lines of departments within this structure. So when the CEO, myself, will be running the organization operationally, and then we have executives. So we have to, by the ACT, deal with compliance. We have to deal with inspections for the state agents. We have to look at the education of the state agents, and obviously we need to look at the corporate service element. I would like to say it's important for us that we, as a currently a national centralized organization, we are looking at the provinces because we have found there's a need for both consumers and estate agents to be served by our regulation and our legislation. They need protection in those provinces and they have not had that. So we are now deploying a strategy where by 2050 we would have provincial offices to better serve our consumers out there. So we're looking at KZN, Western Cape, also Eastern Cape, and I think Mpumalanga for the first, and then we continue building on the provincial network. When you look at transformation, and I must say, this has been very sad for an organization the Act created the EAB in 1976, and up to now, we're sitting with a highly untransformed group of estate agents. 90% of all estate agents are white. There's about 40,000 estate agents out there, and we know how big this the economic benefit of this sector is, both commercial, high-end properties, holiday letting, rentals. All of those transactions are moving through the hands of estate agents, and we are finding very little transformation. So we've embarked on a process, a new program that will bring 10,000 new entrants into the sector over a three-year period, and we've done this by meeting with those estate agency firms, about 10,000 firms out there, and they pledged to employ one intern from the previously disadvantaged individual, so that they can become interns in their business, go through the training, and they will end in a two-year, three-year period, they will become business owners. And so we will transform the industry through a structured process. So we're also partnering with the private sector and public sector on the funding for it, because there's money required for education. The service sector is currently our main partner in terms of this. But it's important for us to see that we can transform the sector. We also need youth transformation. The average age of an estate agent is about 58 years old. So we can see that it's a retiring industry. And we want to use the experience of the current people, but also transfer those people to the younger people. That's why we are working very closely with the structured process to bring in new estate agents. I also want to mention that the EAB has been receiving key audit reports, and it's something that we are focusing on a lot, but it's also important for us to look at our performance in terms of other programs. So when we look at our programs, we focus. One of the new items that we have is to eliminate the title deed backlog, and we are focusing on two components of that, is to obviously understand the size of the problem which we're doing for this year. We need to know, of the pre-94 stock, what is the size of the backlog, how many of those houses not been transferred into the beneficiaries, and also the post-94 stock. We also need to know, both so many houses, how many of those houses where the beneficiaries have not received the title deed. In terms of compliance, which is part of our core mandate, with disciplinary processes, inspection processes, and also make sure that only licensed operators operate out there. In terms of stability fund, it's important for us to maintain that stability fund in the best interest of the consumers, and to grow the fund while we are serving the needs of the consumers in there. In terms of educational training, we are doing consumer awareness. We are doing, we're also going to be looking at how the transactions in the affordable market and the subsidized market is operating, so we can start getting stats on that. And then we also run a board exam for all estate agents so they can get a professional designation as we have a professional body for the real estate sector. In terms of administration, of course, we do all the back office from human resources and customer service and the like. So we have, in our new ADP, looked at what is going to be our key performance annual task, and we've put here, for the elimination of the title deed project, what we want to achieve in 2015, and how we see the pre-94 stock, how that elimination will happen after 2017. And also for the post-94 stock, that we also give ourselves a period that we can work with provincial municipalities, with national departments, all the stakeholders, to see how we can eradicate this backlog. So I must say, for 2014, our output is to issue a report that we'll table to the Minister through Monday, and then we'll also come back to the commentary details about this at our next opportunity. In terms of compliance, we'll also look at how we can increase our processes to ensure that complaints are resolved within a reduced time. Now, these complaints sometimes have a lot of legal issues to them, and therefore, if we can do this in 6 months, then we're doing very well. That's what we're trying to achieve, and 65% of those complaints are resolved within 6 months. But there are obviously more complex matters that involves a lot of efforts of the law, and those will take a bit longer to resolve. We also do inspections, and we go out to estate agent firms where we inspect their compliance to the Act, and here we've partnered with about 13 audit firms. So we've inspect to it, but where we cannot reach, we also deploy the resource that we have in a co-sourcing model where auditors will go out and do an inspection on those firms and we'll give feedback after. In terms of our registrations, we also have targets in terms of how soon we would like a person to be able to enter the sector, and we hope to issue such a new registration within 21 days. And if someone renews an existing person, they should be able to renew their fidelity fund certificates within 5 days. In terms of fidelity fund, it's also important for us that as we process a claim, we would like to be able to assist the consumers where they've lost money, where they can, where those claims can be financed within a 6-month period. There's obviously a lot of legal issues with that, and the law normally, when the court system makes it a bit longer for us to deal with it, but we are aiming to at least deal with the easy ones in a 6-month period. And then it's important for us in terms of the interest that we receive from the money held in the estate agent's trust account, that we collect all of those monies within the required period. So in terms of the education, it's important for us that the estate agents are seen as a trusted advisor, and they must also be well qualified in what they do. They are dealing and advising on a very important transaction in most expensive transactions you deal with in that specific year. And so we do a lot of education and training for them. We also focus on educating the consumers out there, and we've put how many we are planning to do during this year, but then also for how we deal with training estate agents who are going nationally on a program where we would have workshops with them to keep them up to date with the best practices of the industry. We also have our to do with the research in the affordable and subsidized market, and we're hoping that very soon we'll be able to give stats on the transactions happening in the RTD, BNG, and affordable market. Currently, we are aware that there are transactions happening, but there's not sufficient information recorded through the channels, and that is one of the capabilities we would like to create so we can be able to report better on what is happening in that specific sector. So in terms of our administration, it's important for us that all the findings that we receive from the Auditor General is resolved in a record time, and that we also reduce our vacancy rate as what we currently have. So we are on a drive to really close all of the key functions that we can operate optimally. In terms of our ICT environment, we also would like to be more modernized and more efficient in how we deliver our services, and therefore on a modernization program. And then in terms of customer service, a very important target for us is that 85% of all of the queries that we receive from stakeholders should be resolved within 48 hours, and that is a goal that we strive to achieve. I would like to ask our CFO to maybe just talk through the various sources of funding and some of the other items. Thank you.
Thank you very much, CEO, Honorable Chair, and Honorable Members. Just in terms of our funding model, I must mention on the onset that the EAB does not also receive funding from the fiscal. We are self-funded, and this is how we generate manage and control the fidelity fund, and for that there's a fee that we charge. And of course, once the estate agents have acquired minimum qualifications, for them to continue to be relevant in the industry, they have to undergo a continuing professional development, which is the function that EAB is conducting. We're conducting CPD training, and for that we charge CPD fees. And of course, if we have the surplus funds, we would invest that in the market, in the money market. And this is how each element of our revenue source contributes towards the total revenue of 97 million, and mostly from, as I've mentioned, the levies and the management fee. And in terms of the trend, most importantly, what I would like to highlight is that the Act empowers us, in consultation with the department and the minister, to draft regulations which empowers us to levy the fees of the agents. We are currently reviewing our regulations by increasing the levies by 40%, simply because, one, we need additional funding, but secondly, we haven't increased the levy since 2006, despite the inflationary increases and also enhanced resources within the estate agency and transport. So this is what we are doing. But of course, in support of transformation, we are not going to increase the fees for the new entrants, which are the interns, so that we can encourage new entrants. He has mentioned that the average age of an estate agent is 58 years, so we want to encourage young people to enter the market. And of course, he mentioned that we are going to establish regional centers, provincial centers, and of course, our salary bill will increase due to that as we roll out the implementation of the regional centers across the province. In terms of our balance sheet, the net worth, we invest heavily on human, we rely heavily on our human resources, which is off balance sheet. So it wouldn't show much there, except that most of our assets is our land and buildings. And when we roll out the implementation of the regional centers, we'll look initially at renting out some properties or using our sister agencies in those provinces. I'm not going to go through that. And in terms of our expenditure of the program, this is just a summary of it. And during the current financial year, we'll be doing the scoping of the title deed restoration project. And the following financial year going forward, that is when the implementation will take place. In terms of challenges financially related, our income streams are very much limited. And in the short term, of course, as I've mentioned, we are consulting with the department to increase our fees. But in the long term, we don't envisage to get funding from the National Treasury. We want to revise the framework. The funding framework. What our position is that the industry is making sufficient cash reserves. The property industry is worth about 3 trillion. So the industry itself should be able to fund
over to you, gentlemen. Over to you, gentlemen. Ask the gentlemen.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, my first question is the question of death. If you are doing the Jews or the Jews, don't worry. But I think it's the very last question for the answer to the question. Who knows the question of the question?
Don't be like, can you please? Don't be like Ralph.
My question is, what is the opening of provision of why are there the delay of the tournament? That's why we're supposed to have the office in North Korea. And the other one is transformation. Transformation, we are talking about 97% of what? That's the carry. That's the carry. That's the carry. How are we going to address that question?
Thanks for the presentation, EAG. It's good to see you coming here so early in the day, but God, I got tired. You have started with the MH. I think there's one issue that I think you will know I'll raise. I think it was the issue that I raised in the budget speech around the diabetes. I think one of the things that I said on that particular day, I said that plans are not visible. For the people out there, when you say, all right, at the end of the year, all we can give you is a piece of paper, which is a report that's going to tell you that you've got 800 or 800,000 houses that need to receive charity. I said on that particular day that that should not be delivered. I want to check whether the reason the research is going to take as long as that it's going to take. Is it because the finance president mentioned the challenges of money here and there? Because this money came after your original budget. So this was an additional money. And it was not coupled with faith. So is that the reason that it was not initially got all of in the expenditure of the EAB when the original budget was passed, and then you had to find 500,000 somewhere to put in a resource to do this research. Will that be the reason why no charity would be given to the recipient in this financial year? Thank you.
My second one was linked with the one of the winner. About the constituent absence of housing, which I said to be dominating. And then the next one was that on the secondary. On the secondary money, for the feeling that is an element of other departments. And what happens is people information.
Thank you, Honorable Papa. Honorable members is us. Before you respond, that's for my own peace of mind. If you can just let me know about your board of directors, now that you have said the estate agents is all their average 58 years and predominantly white. If I may know those board of directors, how are they? How many? And the item of course is that briefing. And for that I can sleep at night knowing that they are not predominantly white. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, because you are sharing a part of your question, the Act creates 15 board members. And it seems they're also average 58 years old. So we know that youth representation. I think 35 is the end of youth, and maybe there's one board member that's just past that, the youngest one there. Then, so five who are state agents, five who are from consumer interest bodies, and those will be their role there, and none. other five were professionals like lawyers, asset conveyors, and chartered accountants. So all the five are the first put together to make decisions in the best interest of the consumer and the public. So I would say that yeah, out of the 15 that we have there, it's 2 white and then 13 black. In terms of our gender representation, also not so great. I think we short there probably 40% female and then 60% male. The estate agency sector as a whole is dominated again by females, except we're trying to redress the age youth issue and also the economic participation of British individuals. So that's also big thing that we have to do. So I think Chedi can sleep with one eye. More come. So if we go also to Mr. Tolle's question, I think the board itself in terms of also focusing on restructuring, and we really focus on gender issues as we do look at our organization also dominated by females, but as I say, we are also continue working on the gender issues. The provincial offices are phased in. So remember, we have a housing office that we centralized currently. And then we have been there so that there were 61 offices. So we've actually gone through such a process saying that we do have to serve better in our provinces, and therefore we're now rolling out those offices. So one office could be in a smaller province more of a contact center, whereas another province could warrant a fully functional office. So those are how we're rolling those out. We had to go through our performance plans to get it approved and so we, and so we're rolling out on that now. If I also want to talk to the links about other departments, we are establishing very good links with the Department of Rural and the Land Reform. We also have relationships with Public Works. And these kind of relations are going to deal with another question, deal with transformation. The question was, how are we going to transform the industry? So we know that a seller, the private individual housing, who sells the residential housing, if you use an estate agent, you may choose a specific estate agent by virtue of the fact that 90% of them are currently experienced in the market, or you can't find a black estate agent, or for some reason, so currently the land is in the hands of the seller. So the landlord, when he is looking for a tenant, he would also go and find himself an estate agent. So it happens that we're bashing a little bit with changing the mindset of those who give the mandate, both seller and landlord. Buyers, when it comes to that specific house, you will find that the person who is the agent could be a white person, so we have to continue the transaction. What we are doing, and we appreciate the support of the portfolio committee, we are working with Public Works on a structured program where we are explaining to them how important it is when public sector transacts with immovable property, whether it is the buying and selling of a property or Public Works providing accommodation, office accommodation to another public office, but we use someone else's building. Through that process, they need to then say that we need to have a D service provider that is also an estate agent registered with us. So they have to go through a process, and that is something to translate into the public strength of renting of offices or buying of buildings. When there are intermediaries, then those should go to the young black estate agents. Something that will really happen. And if I also have to respond to the question I don't want to respond to, the truth is, the ADP that we are spending on now did not have a type of component of budget. We'd always do support and so forth. Now, very clear in the budget about each what we do. What we promised to do is to deliver a report by certain days within the 100 days, and I really would like to ask the committee to allow us to complete that process. It's important for us to get the correct information. We know how many houses are out there, how many houses have been built. We know how many houses, we have an idea how many houses were built before 1994. There are so many combinations of reasons of why the person who signed initially in that pre-94 house is not the current occupant. And there are beneficiary-related issues. There are complexities of how they are traded. People have sold the right occupancy right has been sold. and someone says, I have a good recommendation for this patient. I bought this house from the old lady who's staying there. I paid the money. I took her to university and I've been staying there for 20 years. So that'd be much complex before all of us to deal with all the beneficial issues. In the post-94 stuff, we also learn that there are this term called permission to occupy. And that is also part of where houses have been built on cheap land and so forth. So when title is not being, so then we have to work with the Department of the Roof. Because I must say, it's very important for us because the Department of Human Settlement nationally is supporting us as an entity through this process. We are not on our own at any time to solve this big problem. We've done a lot of work in terms of the case. So the Department has done a lot of work, also working a lot with Anton Arendt, also from the Department, who's also working with the team. So we are not saying, I feel it's time to solve this big task. The problems are giving their support. And what we are trying to hope to achieve for now is to try and find where the backlog. We don't want, so your question was, is it because we don't have money and no one will receive their title? People are receiving titles still every single day and they'll continue receiving titles because the problems of the municipality are still dealing with the problem. And as we work with them, we're hoping that they will continue doing what they're supposed to do while we say to them, leave the backlog, focus on what you have to do for this year so that we can deal with the backlog. We see there's a bit of a happy letter, give a key, and there's a timing difference by when the title is issued. So we want them with those ones that they say, last year, first out, those ones you've done last year, get those cycles in. We'll go to the old ones and try to do it. So that you know the problem is not going to continue growing at the time. 5 years will be done in the project, then you see the backlog just move to a next number. So I think it's something that we all as a country will work together, all departments trying to solve it, because it's something we're going to give back to each of our beneficiaries out there, where the constitutional right to our house. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Honorable members, that now takes us to the end of the presentation from the estate agency access board. We are actually left now with one entity that is supposed to present. And its name is called Community Schemes Ombuds Service. Now, the department has indicated that they probably might have looked at the program and decided that they would come when their slot is almost there. So their slot was from 3 to 4. So now the time is quarter to 4. So they should be here. I'm sure they are. Maybe they have walked in, but we didn't see them. So I just want to understand from the department, is the slot here so that we don't do injustice to them? The slot, their slot is here. We are running quite late for them because they were supposed to present at 3. So we want to apologize in advance if they are here. We have to let them present a bit later than the time that we had given them because now it's quarter to 4. So we want to know if they are ready to present. That's all.
The CISOs is not amongst us as yet. We were hoping that they would join us by 3. As a result, when we were communicating with them, they were not answering, so we thought they were still in transit. But up to this moment, they have not been able to answer there, to respond to our calls, and they are not here. We do apologize.
Thank you very much. We have had 7 presentations out of 8. I'm going to let the portfolio committee members brief on that one about the absence of the thought to present so that as I do the conclusion the remarks, I hear what the honorable staff have to say about that. Any comments? Honorable minister.
No, sir. This is quite an anomaly for the whole issue. Because if you're talking about the big group of professionals, now for them not to study the first engagement, but really starting on a bad footing. These entities are quite important because their work is about transforming South Africa. They are more relevant to the 80% of South Africans who need government practice. It's including the because I think by just giving them a little bit of doubt, the department must also, because it comes back, these are your enemies. Who do you go? This is how you relate to them. They must treat the portfolio committee.
Thank you, Honorable
Minister.
Honorable
Kana? Thank you. Yeah, no. It's a tough one. Because we saw an updated presentation this morning. This doesn't make sense. I hope they didn't think that we are going to look at the presentation and deliberate on the presentation by ourselves. I think we deserve a far much better chair. And basically, I don't know, we haven't appointed a chief of budget.
We have, but he will be starting with the source with effect from next month. So currently we've got the CFO, so it's not a big team as yet. It's one of our youngest entities that we are capacitating.
I think Chair, we must just get the proper reasons why they sent us the presentation and they decided not to come. And then we'll think when they actually. No, it's easy. They have to come and account on the position. Oh, just tell them in that nice letter that they are not going to have it easy on the 14th. You see, today we didn't grill anyone. They will be so unfortunate that they will have to be grilled on why they miss their flight from wherever they are coming from. Thank you.
Thank you very much, honorable members. From the department, therefore, we... No, you must not do that.
Sorry. Don't be offended. Because I want it to be communicated. I want it to be communicated properly to them that we are aiming for them not coming. But if there's an explanation, maybe the department will assist us. There will be an explanation. But they would know that we are not comfortable about them coming without their experience or not.
Thank you. So what it says in essence, therefore, we need a written explanation why the support is not here. We appreciate the presentation that they sent us, but this presentation can't talk to itself. Somebody must talk to it. That's number one. Number two, the department is, at the end of the day, the one that owns the entity. So it cannot be correct that the department is as surprised as us portfolio committee members when the source is not here. Something tells us that there's something not well managed somewhere. But that exactly is made, we will hear the explanation. Because there might be probably a valid explanation. So, as Honorable Papa said, we will therefore wait for that explanation. That doesn't take away the fact that out of 8 entities from the department, 7 have presented. That's about 95%. So, that doesn't say we are not here. We are very big, but we would have loved to have 100%. So the fact that this was dropped the ball and therefore made the department to achieve 95% instead of 100% today is not something that they can get away with. But we appreciate your presence here. And that takes us to the end of today. One of the major reasons why exhausted as we are, because you could see my members are very tired. But it was very important to us. for us, we need to understand your money so that we don't get confused when we interact with you. We know exactly who is doing that. So for us today was that opportunity for entities to come and present to us and say this is what we do. And level the playing field a little bit, so that at least now we are almost at the same level. We are very happy. But when we interact, therefore, in this whole term, up to, we still have a chance to interact with you, up to 2019, we are able to know what is it that we are interacting you on, what is it that you are supposed to be doing. You told us, you gave us the document. So when we question you, we will be questioning you on what you told us that you are supposed to be doing. And we really appreciate it. Thank you very, very much. And we hope to work well together, as you might have understood. Today was not a very bad meeting because you were coming to tell us what to do. The next meeting, therefore, we will be asking you, what do you do? Are you doing it? For today, we didn't ask those questions because you were telling us this is what the Lord says you must do. So the next time we meet, don't expect the same nice trait. My face can be very happy. It will be asking those kind of questions. So the members will be asking, you said you are doing ABCD, are you doing it? So that then you are doing our oversight here. But obviously, we can't start there. We start by knowing what is the start. Thank you very much for gracing us with your presence. It was a good interaction. At least you are 2 hours early in your time budget. You were supposed to be leaving at 6, but you are leaving at 4, and we think that you've managed our time very well. Thank you very, very, very much. Unfortunately, for us, portfolio committee members, tomorrow in the afternoon, in the evening, just indicate to the support staff what time you must be picked. Transport will be picking members from far, from the parliamentary villages. We're going to the party session Thursday, Friday. Unfortunately, we have to pay them the money that they are being paid. We are paying them the money now by making. So it's unfortunate. You can't just get the money and not pay them.